Well, good evening, Kairos. It is good to see your faces tonight. Tonight, we're continuing our study in this idea, this concept of vital friends. And I don't know anything that can derail friendship more than good old-fashioned conflict, right? So, like, maybe the most terrifying words in the English language are, can we talk? Has that ever happened to you? Right? Where somebody's like, hey, can we talk? And maybe they send that to you in a text message and your blood just ran cold. Or somebody comes up to you and says, hey, listen, can we talk? And then you say, sure, what about? And they say, well, let's just save that for later. And then you're just like, oh no. You know, if it's a boyfriend or girlfriend, you're like, they're breaking up with me tonight. If it's a boss, you're like, I'm getting fired. You just know something is going down when someone says, can we talk? And we all know that conflict's a big deal. Show of hands, who loves conflict in the room? Like three of us, cool, right? Everybody else is like, no, nope, not gonna go there. Don't want that, don't want any part of conflict. And that's natural and normal to not want conflict. In fact, most of us would rather everything to be fine, which is actually a godly mentality. In fact, Romans chapter 12, verse 18 says, if possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. So, like, it's a good thing to not just love conflict. And yet, conflict comes for everybody. And so today, as we look at this passage in 1 Samuel chapter 24, I want to just say something tonight that's pretty freeing. And that is this, is that conflict is common. Conflict is common. Every single one of us, at some point in our life, maybe even right now, the moment you're in right now, You may experience conflict, and it is common. It is part of the human condition. If you have a pulse and you are leading something, you will have conflict, okay? If you have friends, you'll probably have conflict. If you have parents, if you have coworkers, literally, if you leave your house at all or get online at all or engage with anybody on social media, you're going to have conflict, especially if you're on Twitter, okay? So here's the deal. Conflict is just out there. It just is. And so how we navigate that conflict is what will make or break our friendships, because friendships matter. And if you're living in close proximity to other people, you eventually will find yourself in a situation where you disagree, or the person turns on you, or they come after you. And some of you are actually walking in that right now, where you have someone who is living rent-free in your head, okay? Like, they've just taken up residence, and they're just in there hanging out. And you think about them all the time. They're not thinking about you, but you're thinking about them all the time. Do you have somebody like that tonight? Anybody? Got somebody you're thinking about all the time? You're like, man, I don't know what to do with them. Tonight, this is for you, okay? And so, as we look at David's life, and as we look at him and Saul, we're going to see some things that really will apply to our lives as well, because we're going to find ourselves in this story. Now, who knows the story of David and Goliath? Pretty famous story, right? Everybody, show of hands. All right, if you haven't heard this story, we need to talk, okay? Basically, David kills a giant that's oppressing his people. And most of us, when we hear the story, especially when we grew up maybe in a Christian home, or you read about it in like a church service or an environment where there's a Bible study, you think that that was the end of David's problems, but it's just the beginning, okay? Because David all of a sudden gets to have a celebrity status unlike anybody else in the community and in the kingdom, because he took down Goliath. In fact, he's so popular that when he walks around, people chant things about him, okay? And the Bible tells us that when he's walking through towns, the people would come out and they'd start chanting. They'd say, Saul, who's the current king of Israel, has slain his thousands, but David his 10,000s, okay? So this is like ancient Near East smack talk. That's what this is. This is kind of praise happening in David's life, where they're praising him for his power and his ability in battle. He's probably not killed 10,000 people, but they're basically saying, whatever Saul's done, David's done better. And that's not a healthy environment for David or for Saul. And Saul begins to be very jealous, and he begins to hate David. So much so that they're at a party, and David's like, playing some music because he's renowned as a musician. So he's playing in Saul's presence. Saul, out of nowhere, picks up a spear and tries to pin David to the wall. Talk about a bad dinner party, right? You've been in some awkward situations. No one's tried to kill each other, right? But here in the Bible, you find David now running for his life. And that's where our story picks up. David has been running from Saul, and Saul has gathered up an army to go take down David. And that's what we see in verse 1. Let's read that again together tonight. Verse 1, 1 Samuel 24. It says, "When Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, 'David is in the wilderness near En-Gedi.' So Saul took 3,000 of Israel's fit young men and went to look for David and his men in front of the rocks of the wild goats." So you find Saul going to pursue David, and he takes 3,000 soldiers with him. And he hears that David's in En-Gedi. Now, En-Gedi, you can go there today. It's near the Dead Sea. It's one of the most dry, inhospitable places in the entire earth. In fact, you got a picture here of the Dead Sea. I've been to the Dead Sea. You can actually read a book while you're floating in it. It's a unique place, unlike anywhere else, because of the high mineral content in the waters. But this is about where David is hiding. And Saul is looking for David. And David ends up hiding in a cave. And he's hiding there because he doesn't want to die. And as that story continues to unfold, you find Saul entering into the cave after David, okay? So David's hiding. He's gone to a place where he never thought he'd go. He's hiding in a cave, and he's in a place much like the place where we feel when we're in the middle of conflict, right? Sometimes when you're in the middle of conflict, you may feel like nobody knows where you are. You may feel pursued. You may feel like you're in the dark. And in the middle of this, the problem that he's been running away from enters into that cave with him. Sometimes we try to get as far away from conflict as we can, and yet it pursues us right into the middle of our deepest retreat, the place we're trying to hide the most. And that's where David is. Now, Saul enters into the cave with him, and the Bible tells us that he went to relieve himself. Now, it's interesting because this is a weird part of the text, because you go, what's really happening here in this passage of Scripture? And yet, it's central to it. And so I did a little Hebrew study here. Literally, this passage is a passage that's very difficult to interpret. It literally means that Saul came in to cover his feet. Now, that's weird. Like, we don't really understand what it means to cover his feet. So scholars have kind of done some work. They've said, as best we can tell, this is either he's going to take a bathroom break or he's going to take a nap, okay? So we don't know what he's doing, but he's going into a cave to do it. And he's relaxing in the cave, probably because it's so hot. And as he's in the cave, David has an opportunity. He has an opportunity to take matters into his own hands and take over the kingdom. Because Saul is in the cave where David is and all of his men. This brings us to the main idea that I want you to walk away with tonight, okay? Here's the main idea. The main idea is this. Conflict creates an opportunity to bless or break people. Let me say that again, because this is what happens to David in the cave. He is given an opportunity in the middle of his conflict. And conflict is an opportunity to bless or break people. And David's faced with an opportunity to take out Saul and to break him. Now, the reason we know this is because as he's in the cave, David's men come and speak to David. So let's look at verse 4. So it says this. David's men are in the cave. They said to him, "Look, this is the day the Lord told you about. I will hand your enemy over to you so you can do to him whatever you desire." Then David got up and secretly cut off the corner of Saul's robe. So as they're in the cave, Saul's there. He's probably sleeping. And in this moment, there's an opportunity. And David's men say, "Listen, David, we've been running for a long time, and now it seems that God has delivered Saul, your enemy, into your hands. And they interpret the events that are happening the wrong way. They interpret it only through what is expedient for them, what they can do to make their case move forward, to end the suffering that they're in, to end the conflict their own way. But it's not God's way. You see, God had anointed David to become king. That's one of the reasons why Saul is so angry with David, because he doesn't want to give up the kingdom to David. And now David has an opportunity to bring about what God has promised to him. But it would have been an act of murder. And David does not murder Saul. He does not break him, but he does do something that he should not have done. He goes up and he cuts a corner off of Saul's cloak, and then he is struck with his conscience by what he has done. In fact, that's what it says in verse 5. It says, afterward, David's conscience bothered him because he had cut off the corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, I swear before the Lord, I would never do such a thing to my Lord, the Lord's anointed. I would never lift up my hand against him, since he's the Lord's anointed. So something happens here that I want us to just take a moment and think about. David does something to Saul that he should not have done. And he is struck with his conscience by the Lord, and he repents of it. So what did he do? He cut Saul's cloak. Now, some of you guys may be wondering, like, what's the big deal with that? Like, why would that be something that would cause David to be ashamed of or repent of? In Saul's day, and in David's day, kings didn't wear a crown. They didn't wear a crown. That's something that happened much later. But what they did have that showed that they were kings, they had a coat. They had a cloak that was the symbol of their kingship. And it had to be completely whole. In fact, if there are any rips in it, it was a huge mark on their position and their authority and their honor. In fact, if any of it was damaged, they had to go repair it immediately. And so what David is doing, when he goes up and he cuts part of Saul's cloak, he is damaging Saul's reputation. It'd be like going to the President of the United States of America and ripping off his American flag pin that's on his lapel, or taking Air Force One for a ride. These are all symbols of his power, right? They're symbols of his position and his status. And David tries to break Saul's honor and his position by cutting his cloak. And he repents because he knows that's not God's way. And when it comes to conflict, I want you to listen to me really closely right now. When it comes to conflict, there will be opportunities for you to break somebody, to say something that'll cut them deeply, to shame them in front of their friends or online, to assassinate them in your mind. But this is not the way of Christ. These opportunities may seem like you're going to win in the moment, where you're going to look like the better person, or that you're going to win in the conflict, but every single one of them will bring you to a place of brokenness, because when you break somebody, really what you're doing is you're breaking yourself. When you break somebody else down, what you're doing is you're damaging your own character. And the risk that David was facing here was a risk of damaging the kingdom that God was going to give him by sinning as his very first act. And what David does when he breaks Saul's honor by cutting his robe, he does what is most important to do when we fail. That's what I love about this story, is that David doesn't do it perfectly, but he does repent as soon as he realizes that he takes a misstep. Okay? So this is something I think is important for us to understand when it comes to conflict between us and someone that we know or that we love, is that you're not called to do it perfectly. In fact, because we're emotional people, often we're gonna mess up when we're trying to walk through conflict. Have you felt that way sometimes when you're going through conflict? You say the wrong thing, or you do the wrong thing, or you act in such a way that you look back and you're like, man, I'm so ashamed by the way that I talk to my spouse, or to my children, or to my friend, or my roommate. Man, I just want to go crawl into a hole. I want to go back into the deepest parts of the cave and never come out. But David doesn't do that. David repents, and he changes his action, and he moves from being someone who breaks Saul to someone that blesses Saul. He blesses him. And that's what you see him do next. You know what David does after he repents? He takes action. Look with me in verse 8. Saul leaves the cave. And in verse 8, David takes a courageous step. It says, after that, David got up, went out of the cave, and called to Saul, "My lord, the king." And when Saul looked behind him, David knelt down low with his face to the ground and paid homage. David leaves the cave behind and comes out to the front of the cave, calls out to Saul, and bows down before Saul. Think about it. David's been running from Saul for months. He has the opportunity to kill Saul, doesn't. And then the very next thing he does, he comes out and surrenders and takes a posture of humility and bows down to Saul. That's a courageous moment. And he honors Saul. And he chooses to bless Saul and actually says to Saul, "I could have killed you, but I didn't. So let God judge between us." And in this moment, David puts all of his confidence in God. It's a moment where he says, "Is God real or not?" And the way that I'm going to know if God is real or not is me stepping out in faith and blessing my enemy. Me stepping out in faith and giving up my rights. Me stepping out in faith and saying, I'm not going to be in control anymore, but I'm going to look to reconcile this relationship. That's what it means to bless somebody. It's to seek reconciliation. And David does that by leaving the cave where he's been hiding and connecting with Saul. And it's incredible because what he's doing in this moment, he's saying to Saul, he's saying, I believe that God has anointed me to be the next king. And in this moment, I might die because my enemy can now kill me. But instead of that, I believe that God will intervene. And here's the key to overcoming conflict. When you choose to bless somebody, you're saying, God, I want you to have a seat at the table. I want you to be in the middle of this conflict, and I want you to step in. Man, that's a scary place to be. But it's the right place to be, where God can actually move in someone else's life and in your life when you choose to bless them in the middle of conflict. You see, the only way that we can enter into this kind of conflict reconciliation is when we look at what Jesus is like. The only way that we can bless somebody is when we realize that Jesus was broken for us. We can bless somebody because Jesus was broken. We don't have to break anybody because Jesus was broken on a cross for us, and he gave himself for you and I, and we deserve the worst that could come to us, but Jesus gave himself for us instead. And when we have confidence that he will not leave us or abandon us, then we have a different way to look at the world. So here's what you find David doing. He goes and says, okay, Saul, I'm here. I could have killed you, but I didn't. And when he blesses Saul, the most remarkable thing happens is that Saul repents and Saul himself blesses David back. Can you imagine that? David's afraid. He doesn't know what's going to happen. When he goes to Saul and says, Saul, I could have killed you. I'm right here, but I didn't because God's in charge. Saul then says something that nobody saw coming. You know what he says? He says, now, David, I know you're going to become king. Now, David, I see that God has chosen the right person because you walked in such a righteous way. And so here's what I know about all of us. Conflict's a big deal. Most of us are scared to initiate. But I want you to see what David does. David takes that first step of initiation when he steps out of the cave. And every single one of us, when we come to a place of conflict, we are invited into taking that first step, because that's what Jesus did for us. When we were sinners, Jesus chose to step out of heaven and enter into our story so that we could have life. And the reality is, when you operate that way, when it comes to difficult opportunities and difficult times, and when you're struggling, when you feel afraid or you feel like there's brokenness in the relationships that you're with, you get to look like Jesus. I'm going to tell you a story how this worked out in my life. When I was right out of college, my first job in ministry was being a youth pastor, okay? Being a youth pastor is a lot of fun. We had lock-ins. We had messy games. We did a lot of fun things, but my first job wasn't even being the main youth pastor. I was working for this other guy who was the main youth pastor, and I was running the junior high ministry. And so we had a ton of raging hormones everywhere. And I loved it. It was fun. I had a lot of cringeworthy moments during that season, but it was a great season. But that summer, my friend Jason, who was the head youth pastor, was going to be going away for the summer, and I was going to take over everything, okay? So he was leaving, and I was like, I'm going to miss you, Jason, but also very excited to be the man for the whole summer, okay? So Jason was leaving. I'm getting ready. I'm like amped. I'm like, oh, man, I got some plans. Like, I was ready to go. And Jason left for a week. A week later, came back and said, no, I don't want to go away. I actually want to stay right here, and I want my old job back. And I was like, what? Like I like you, but this isn't what I expected, okay? And I remember getting pulled into a room by somebody who was a third party, and that person said, I think you should let Jason have his job back, and even though this was the deal, it was all written down, you should just be the bigger person and just give him back his old job. And I remember me saying no. Like, every part of me was like, no, this is so unfair. And I was mad at Jason. Like, he was a great guy, but I was just mad at Jason. I just was like, man, I can't believe it. I'd stomp around for like a week, just trying to figure out what to do. And in that moment, I felt like the Lord just said, man, Mike, you need to find a way where you both can win. So I bottled up my pride, gave it to Jesus, and I sat down with Jason. I hadn't actually talked to him because I was so mad, because the conflict was such a big deal. And so I sat down with him, and I just said, man, I'm willing to do whatever you want to do. And we reconciled, and we decided we would both lead that summer. Let me just tell you, it was one of the best summers of my life. And even today, one of the people I call when I'm thinking about things or when I'm struggling is, you know who? It's Jason. In fact, he invited me up a couple years ago to see the church that he's pastoring at, and I got to lead a retreat for some of the men in his church, and the connection that we had from that summer was as real as any friendship I've ever had. Because friendships do change us. And the way that we walk in those friendships, and the way that we give ourselves to our friends and share those lives with those life moments with each other, and the way that we share the pain and the hurt, and the way that we overcome adversity by blessing each other, builds greater bonds than we could ever imagine. What I know about Satan is he wants to destroy friendships. God's in the business of reconciling relationships. So as we close out tonight, I want you to consider taking a next step. As we reflect on what we're learning tonight, when we think about David being willing to take the first step of reconciliation by leaving the cave that he was hiding in and stepping out into the light and saying, hey, I'm right here. I want to fix this. I want you to take a courageous step tonight to reconcile some relationships. I don't know what those relationships are. It could be a relationship with a friend that you've lost touch with because of an argument. It could even be a relationship with a parent or a friend that you've not seen in a long time, or it could be someone that you know right now and there's an active conflict going on. But when we choose to bless somebody, we need to take the first step into that. Now, the first step is really the next step. And I don't know what that step is for you, but I want to give you four options. Because sometimes when we think about this, we're like, okay, how do I do this, right? And I realize that not every relationship can be restored fully. There are opportunities to reconcile with people. And then there's some where the boundaries that are a part of the relationship dynamic, some of those boundaries need to be in place. Because there might have been some kind of abuse, or there might have been some kind of deep brokenness that we can't overcome on our own. We need a third party to intervene, and we recognize that as part of the equation. We're not asking anybody to step into a place that's not safe or unhealthy for them to walk in, okay? But for other relationships where we're like saying, okay, there's no abuse, and we're in a place where we do know that God's pressing in on us to step into some kind of healing. I want to give you four actions that you can take tonight as a next step. And the first is this, is to pray. Sometimes we jump right over that. We're like, prayer? Good, got that one. I'll pray a 5-second prayer, and then I'm just going to move on, right? But prayer is powerful. Prayer changes things. It changes people's hearts. Sometimes when I have a conflict with my wife, which I know you guys are shocked to hear, right? All of a sudden, I realize she's praying for me, and my heart's changing. I'm like, stop it. I don't want to, right? Stop. Stop praying me into this. Never underestimate the power of prayer. So maybe sometimes just praying for somebody is the next step. Just start praying that God would do something that only He could do. And sometimes when you're praying, God doesn't change their heart as much as He changes yours, because you're the one that needs to really take that next step. So pray. Some of you, that's the step you need to take. Second, some of you need to take the step of seeking advice. For you, the step is to say, I need to have someone wiser than me speak into this, because I can't see it. I don't know what the next step is. I felt that way before. I have had times where I was just like, man, I'm just so frustrated. I remember telling my wife one time, I was like, I'm so frustrated that all I can do is just feel. I can't even like name the feelings, because I don't really have names for feelings. I'm like either hungry or I'm okay, all right? Those are the two feelings I got. That's why I got like three little girls. They teach me all kinds of new feelings, right? They're like teaching me like what it is to be upset or hungry or sad or whatever. But like I'm really not very good at like processing my emotions. Sometimes it's good to go to someone wise, someone who's outside of the problem and say, hey, help me understand what I'm feeling or what to do next. So for some of you, it's that step of saying, I'm gonna seek advice. Others of you need to consider the timing. It might be that you need to wait until the time is right. And that may seem scary because you want to deal with it right now. I like to deal with conflict head on. I'm like, let's talk about it right now, right now, right here, right now. Let's not turn around from anything we're doing. Let's just like face it head on. But sometimes waiting until the time is right, the moment is right, is the next step. And that may be you. But the last step is probably one that all of us need to take, which is the last step is to initiate. Some of you guys have been praying. Some of you have been waiting. Some of you have sought wise advice, but now you just need to take that next step, which is to initiate. Like David, I'm going to step out of the cave and say, I'm right here. I would love to connect. So as we respond tonight, maybe God is pressing on your heart to text somebody, and say, hey, can we talk? And I know that you know the weight of those words, right? They're terrifying. But maybe you need to be the one who actually sends them this time. Maybe you need to say, hey, listen, I love you. Maybe you need to send that to someone. Say, I love you. Maybe it's, I forgive you. Maybe it's going to their house and meeting up with them in the next couple days. Maybe it's scheduling coffee. But I do know is that the weight of conflict can damage us. It damages our relationship with each other and with God. And it's not worth carrying. So I'm going to pray for us. And as we enter into this time of prayer, I'm just going to ask for the Spirit of God to come down upon this room and do what he can do. So I'm just going to ask for that right now. God, we believe that you are a God of reconciliation. You've reconciled us to yourself. And this story of David and Saul is ultimately our story, where we have run from you and we have hid from you, but you have pursued us and you've reconciled us to yourself. And God, I just pray that right now, as people in this room are sitting in the midst of this message and they're thinking about conflict that's going on in their life, and they're thinking about the relationships that are swirling around them, I pray that right now we would take a step towards reconciliation, whether that's prayer, whether that's seeking advice, whether that's waiting on you and your timing, or taking that first step and initiating a conversation. So God, right now, would you just fall in this place and give us a sense, first, of your incredible love for us, and secondly, give us the courage to seek reconciliation.